Today's program is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
I'm Souther Teague of Amore Amargo and a co-host of The Speakeasy right here on Heritage Radio Network. You know, my favorite thing to do every week is to come here and be on the show. I have lots of jobs, I'm a very busy person, and I do this because I love it. I get to sit down and talk to all my heroes for about an hour every week. It's incredible, and I hope that you enjoy it, making a great effort to share with you. And we'd like you to share back with us. It's our summer fundraiser, and we'd love for you to donate at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. You can click on the beating heart, and you can even choose shows that you'd like to donate to specifically. And you can also choose a recurring monthly gift. And for all that, we'd be greatly appreciative. Thank you so much.
I'm HRN's Communications Director, Kat Johnson, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. We're fresh off our trip to Slow Food Nations in Denver, a festival that brought together advocates to discuss the future of food. And this week, we're bringing you a special episode inspired by the new Equity, Inclusion, and Justice Manifesto released by Slow Food USA.
If we're going to solve food security, we need to say these people have a right to good, healthful food. But we have to do that in a way that kind of insulates this system from the vagaries of the market.
Because when you're at a table with somebody, you recognize their humanity. And when somebody cooks for you and serves you food, in a way they're saying they care about your survival.
How can we put things into our own hands and have the people of Puerto Rico gain real access to healthy local foods?
Listen to Meat and Three this week for our highlights from Slow Food Nations, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
And my name is Souther Teague.
Souther!
Hey, buddy.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm excited.
Here we go. Explore the room, man. Explore the room.
I'm excited. You and I both fly out tomorrow.
You go
at the
in the
same
morning.
Time, yeah.
And I go in the afternoon. Like,
well, I
like
go
a
at,
smart person.
I go at noonish, but I go from Newark.
Why?
Because I didn't pay for my ticket. My sponsor for my talk paid for my ticket, and that's the airport they chose to fly me out of.
Man,
they wanted to save $15.
Yeah, by making me take a $100 car ride out there.
I had
Newark.
I had an ex-girlfriend who worked for this big corporation, and she got like free, like car service, like rides all the time. So mm-hmm. She would always get me free cars to and from Newark Airport. So it wasn't that big of a deal. That was nice,
right? Anyway,
also they have like tons of like really great like bars and restaurants in there these days. And there's still like the like on the go like OTG stupid bullshit thing where like you have to like you know order from an iPad.
I hate that shit.
Yeah, yeah, but then
it really it really disconnects you to service.
There are other spots in the Newark airport. That
yeah,
are
yeah.
Good. There's no JFK.
Thanks again, Jason Littrell, for setting that up. You know he did that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Jason.
Big Daddy.
Dude, what
so you we're going down to, let's yeah. talk about New Orleans. We're going down to New Orleans because it's Tales of the Cocktail. It's that time
right.
of year.
That time of year again.
I'm excited to go down and see a lot of the changes that have been made. A lot more inclusivity going on at Tales of the Cocktail.
Right, it's under new management.
Yeah, I mentioned last week that it's there's the first ever LGBTQ event is mm-hmm. being held down there, which is going to be great. But a lot more inclusivity is happening, and a lot more diversity of the panels that's going on. Like, I think it's going to be great this year. And then, of course, you and I are going down to the award ceremony because we've been nominated for Best Broadcast, Podcast, or Video Series.
And thank you to all of our... Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. It's a standing ovation in the studio.
Thanks to all of our listeners out there and all the supporters, everyone who's donated to the station and everyone who's, like, really helped us turn this into a really fun, awesome show that's got a lot of it's got pretty big reach, you know.
How
many countries are we in now?
Oh my god, number of countries? I don't know. I can look it up while we're on the show, though. I have access to that stuff now.
Yeah.
I'm like a real boy.
That's why I asked, because
they emailed me the access.
Yeah. Anyway, so thank you to everyone for all your continued support. And please do hit us up. You know, it's Speakeasy Podcast on Instagram and Speakeasy Radio on Twitter. Hit us up. We're going to be running around all over town the entire time, starting from tomorrow to Monday. You're leaving on Monday as well, right?
Yep. I fly back Monday morning.
Okay.
And then
I fly back Monday afternoon.
And then right back to the grind. Yeah, because you're smart. And then right back to the grind, you know, the shutdown going on here in New York City, where the two largest liquor distributors shut down for 2 weeks at the same time every year.
Which is really 3 weeks.
I don't want to talk about it. That kind of blew our plans to get Windmill open on time. So, but we decided to do some more construction, so we're changing a little bit of the look.
Hey, it's hopefully an opportunity to tighten up some.
Hopefully we'll get Windmill open in a week. So that'll be my new bar, a very French-influenced bar down on Clinton Street.
So you're opening, you open Blue Quarter, and then you're opening Windmill.
Yeah, because
how many more bars do you think you'll open this year?
Let's see. well,
are you
I mean,
doing the math right now? You're on your phone?
I am. I'm typing in stuff. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but we did put in a bid on a space in Williamsburg.
Fuck you.
To do a Maury Margo 2. Whoa, that's the big secret. Another Maury Margo.
That's crazy.
Well, we'll see if we get the
space. Good for you, man. That's great.
We'll see if we get the space. Hey. Anyway, speaking of spaces, let's talk about a really tiny one.
And also...
What?
About the very smart people in the world.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to talk with one of them. Yeah. In the studio today, we have the bar beverage director of Threesome Toll Booth, which I told you I went to. Mm-hmm. It's the bar in Bushwick that seats literally two people plus the bartender. That's your threesome. Very deeply experiential.
Sounds provocative.
It's really cool. And the thing is, I don't know how much we can talk about it today. But Jesse Shadlower's in the studio. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Super excited to have you. Also, super excited to find out. Damon and I both found this out today, and we're both giddy about it. You're listed as one of New York City's 100 smartest people by New York Magazine.
I knew an editor.
Yeah. That's how
we got this show.
That's how we get on the air every time.
Don't break the fourth wall.
Yeah.
If I had been one of the 100 smartest people in my office building at the time, I'd be happy.
Yeah. And then, I mean, that's a huge number. 100 smartest people in New York, that means you're probably easily inside the 500 in the world, right? Like, that's huge.
Well, again, if it were true, maybe.
Your modesty is glowing. Also in the studio, you know, Andrew, I don't know your last name.
Poitras.
Andrew Poitras, who brought us some gifts from Jägermeister to stock up our bar.
A whole bunch of bar tools.
A bunch of bar tools. We now have a mixing glass and shaker.
Like the whole setup.
It's a whole kit. There's a spoon and
thank you.
A hawthorn and a julep and a peeler and a knife and a cutting board. Like, it's a little gig bag that's got
an
it all.
An atomizer that looks like
an
it's
an atomizer.
I just appreciate you guys' service, and I want to make sure you can always have access to getting people drunk wherever you are.
Yeah, it's a go kit. It can go anywhere.
All right.
And they can also hang out right here at our studio bar. So, also, you're an author, Jess. You wrote a book called The F Word. It's been out for a little bit of time. And it's basically just a long-form definition of the word fuck. P.S., you can swear on the show. So don't be afraid. And you did that while or because you were also working for the English Oxford Dictionary? Let's talk about the book.
Sure.
Screw the bar. this is now a literary show. We got a smart person on.
Before bartending, I'm a lexicographer. I write dictionaries. So I spent many years at the Oxford English Dictionary. Before that, I was at Random House in their dictionary department. And the book originally came out at Random House. So we had published a multi-volume scholarly dictionary of slang, and the book originally came out of that. And it's now in the third edition, which was published by Oxford when I was there, and is much more expanded. I mean, the third edition came out after the rise of the internet and ease of research and all that, so it's literally twice the size of the second edition. And it is, in fact, a scholarly exploration of the history of the word fuck.
I have so many questions.
Yeah. How did you pitch this book, and how did you get a person at Random House to go, yeah, we'll write a book called The F Word?
It actually took a long time because I thought, no one will go for this. This will be the most ridiculous thing ever. So again, we were working on this multi-volume dictionary of slang that was taking many years to do, and that was expensive and scholarly, and there was a lot of interesting stuff in that, but most people wouldn't see that because it was not the kind of book that you would just buy. And I thought, well, you know, what if we take all the F word, like everyone want, like how many pages does fuck take up, and like this is really cool. What if we took that and published it as a separate book? And I sat on this idea for a year because I knew if I said that I would get laughed out of an editorial meeting, and finally I brought it up and someone said, oh, that's great, that's, yes, let's do that.
What made you, what turned the corner? What made you get brave, and what do you think changed their mind?
Well, no one was opposed to it. I just hadn't mentioned it. I mean, the only thing...
You just thought they were going to be.
I assumed they were, and I only brought it up because we were sitting in some editorial meeting and no one had anything interesting to say, and it was getting kind of embarrassing. So I thought, well, I might as well mention this stupid idea I had. And
it wasn't so stupid.
Well, yeah. Maybe it was, but there's a book anyway, so...
Yeah. And it's great. I have a copy. I actually brought it when I went to the toll booth for you to sign because I'm nerdy like
thank
that.
Thank you.
I can't remember right this second what you signed in there, but you signed something in your signature. It said fuck, which I thought was apropos. I got to figure out what my signature is going to be. Everybody has their thing. Brad says stay bitter, and you know, Dale draws that little martini glass.
Your tagline, not your signature. You have to have a signature. Have you ever written a check?
Well, you,
come on.
Only on my phone.
You ever paid with a credit card at a bar?
Only on my phone.
You ever
I know
a
my
book?
Signature, but phone? my thing. What am I going to say? I don't know. So you work for dictionaries. That's a smart guy's job. How does one get that job?
Almost always by chance. Seriously, like no one plans to become a dictionary editor, and the people that do are probably not going to be very good at it. You want to get people who have sort of dropped out of grad school in the humanities at some point and, you know, don't really know what they're doing.
Are you describing yourself right now?
I am, but in fact, I am describing it. Like, you don't want people who have finished grad school, because people who have actually finished their PhDs, they usually think, well, this is interesting, I can research this for 4 more years. It's like, no, actually, you have 23 things to get done in the next hour and a half, so you can't research this anymore.
Right.
You know, so the people who dropped out of grad school, you know, still think they need to rush things along.
Got it.
So, like, as far as the word fuck and, like, the, like, you were talking about, you'd mentioned before about, like, slang and stuff like that. Like, were you dealing with, like, different languages and dialects? Like for instance, like, Parisian French and, like Tokyo Japanese. Like, mm-hmm. There's, like, different, like, cities have different slangs and, like, different, like, kind of cadence and cultural, like drive behind the way they speak. Mm-hmm. Was this like coming from that, like when you're like the British, like that fucking fuck, you know, like as a noun or like adverb or adjective, like is it like were you just like
in... Well, so slang worldwide is something I'm certainly interested in. For this book, it was just the word fuck in English. So in fact, in the first edition, I did have a small appendix listing equivalents in other languages. But in fact, it's hard. It didn't really work. It didn't make sense because there isn't always an equivalent, and spending any time describing what the issues were wouldn't have really, it didn't work. So we pulled that out of later things. But it is looking at English around the world. So there are things in there that are specifically British English, specifically American, specifically Australian, one or two specifically Canadian things. But just English examples of the word fuck.
Yeah. We were on the train today, and I just happened upon the pianist in my band, and he was like, we were telling him about the conversation we're going to have today on the show, and he asked, he was like, what's the actual like etymology of, in history, of like, the word fuck, and like, where does it actually come from? Is there a hard, like, for instance, like, we know that, like, the first time cocktail was seen in print was in 1806, and then like maybe it was actually like printed in 1795 before that. But like, when was the first time that there was a documentation of the word fuck?
Well, this is something that there's a little bit of there have been.
There's going to be wiggle room, right?
There's wiggle room, and there are recent discoveries that have changed things. The earliest example that is, you know, extremely clear and there's no argument about is from the late 15th century. We don't have an exact date. And it's in a manuscript. It's in a poem that satirizes the monks of this particular monastery in Cambridgeshire. And there are several scurrilous things in there. The word fuck appears, the word swive, which is the usual Middle English word for sex. And in both cases, these words are written in a cipher where they're replaced by the following letter of the alphabet. So, you know, F begins, you know, the fuck word begins with letter G. And swive appears the same way. So we know exactly what's going on. And this also shows that even at this time, the first example, the word was considered taboo. In any case, there are earlier things that might be related that are a bit hard to discuss, but the one that was a very recent discovery, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, someone discovered in court records from 1310, and in this case we know exactly when it's from because it really is in legal sources, there was a court case in Cheshire in England involving someone whose name was Roger Fuck by the Navel. Seriously, so this appears three times, spelled slightly differently, you know, in this court case, and this is given as his actual name. Again, it's not a joke. This is his name, and there is certainly a history of people with unusual names or names representing certain things. So, for various reasons, things, place names or personal names using words are sometimes considered outside of, you know, the true history of words. But it and precisely what this means, people have discussed. Like, does this mean that he is someone so stupid that he thinks that this is how you copulate? You know, it's not clear exactly how we're supposed to interpret it, but it seems like a sexual interpretation is the only possible thing for this.
But wouldn't that imply then that the word was still older than 1310?
It does imply that, yes, right, because, of course.
And also, everyone's name back then was given, like, Johnson was the son of John.
Right, but right? There are different ways that one can have names. Some of them are patronymics like that, but there are you know job related names, Miller, whatever. There are a lot of different ways names can arise. So a description of what someone is like could certainly be one of them. But yes,
so they used his nickname in court.
Well, apparently, I mean, it's not clear if it was a nickname.
Like
or
to
that,
say he's like, yeah. So what was the case about?
it was an assault case. He was in trouble so for
John,
various times.
John he got mad at with. Someone for like making
John
fun of his name.
Was in a, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's probably the equivalent of John Fuckwit, something like
it's
that.
It's kind of weird. Like, I've never really thought about like the assignment of names to people like so much.
People, but places, you know.
People, places, like, I mean, hell, like and cocktails. I mean, like, we have a lot of fun naming cocktails, you know.
Sure.
And, but like, just like the assignment of names to things. I mean, like, colors, like there was no word for blue until like what, like I think it was like the 14th century.
Yeah, there's a whole book about that too. How even in a lot of Greek writing, there was no word for blue. They would say the water was inky or dark or
the
cloudy.
The wine dark sea. But in fact, it turns out that a lot of that is all like the way that the Greeks referred to color. It doesn't represent the exact what we mean when we talk about color. So words in ancient Greek tend to reflect sort of the tone, you know, the depth of color rather than the.
It's like more like emotionally driven. It seems like.
Well, and also the very nature of. Literally every word is that we made them up, right?
Right.
And we're continuing to make them up.
And how do you communicate with, like, people in other galaxies, you know? Like,
people don't exist.
When, like, when the pioneer...
We are alone.
When the pioneer went out and they have, like, the plaque on the side
exactly.
That has, like, the drawing of, like, a male and a female, like,
and
human form.
And sort
like,
of a map back to us.
Yeah, like a map of the Milky Way galaxy. It's like... Like, who's to even say that, like, they're going to be able to translate that just, like visually?
Right, well, we're hoping.
Right, we're veering off quite a bit, yeah, but I like it. I feel like I've just, like did
we're,
a
well, we're
big,
going on vacation tomorrow.
We're
going on vacation tomorrow. We've got our one foot out the door.
And
Jesse's already on vacation. Well, not quite. You're closed all of August, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What you got, Andrew? Jump
sorry, I had this on my mind. Is there another, a word... other than fuck that is as versatile, like how Damon mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, we'll use it as a noun, we'll use it as an... I mean, you can do it, you can describe something as
a
being
verb,
fucky.
An adjective.
Fuckery.
Yeah, it's used in many different parts
of
speech.
Is there another word, slang or not slang, that would be that versatile?
There are words that are used in a tremendous number of parts of speech and senses.
I was trying to think of one, know, and I couldn't.
Well,
while
so, typically
the
words
versatility
like,
of fuck is just... very profound. I like to say ding dong. Like I will say ding dongery, you ding dong. Stop ding donging around.
Yeah.
And I also it's kind of kid friendly, you know. So like,
It's definitely better than fuck.
You're just substituting. Yeah. Do you have an example off your head?
Well, in the language as a whole, words like set or run usually fall into this category where there are just a tremendous number of uses in different compounds, parts of speech, and so forth. For slang, fuck is pretty much it. I mean, words that
are...
king. Shit is very... is also extremely flexible. But other than that, nothing tends to be as broad. And in particular, when you're talking about the most offensive word, you know, fuck comes up a lot, you know, and partly because it is so much more broad in its use. So cunt, for example, which is usually regarded as more offensive than fuck, nonetheless, its use is very, very limited.
In the United States, but in the UK, it's more like...
I feel like it's
broader in household there, still,
name. Yeah. Like when I'm in London, they pitch the word cunt around like we pitch the word fuck around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, like, the word fuck is extremely satisfying. Like, if you're, like... if you're frustrated and you're like, between like being like, you know what, I'm just not having a really, I'm not having the greatest of days. Between that, saying that, and being like, fuck!
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to go for?
Just one simple exclamation can sum it up for everybody.
And that's actually true across a number of languages where words that are used for that kind of thing tend to have, you know, plosive, like that kind of consonant sound.
Ding dong doesn't work the same way, by the way.
Ding dong is satisfying.
Context, but not in that context.
Say. Not in that way.
You're having
like,
a really
ding
bad...
ding dong!
Yeah, it doesn't work.
But
my uncle well, you can say, do that, but I'm going to laugh at you.
My uncle used to say John Brown.
John Brown?
As in he'd say, John Brown it! Like, God damn it.
Who the hell is John Brown?
Fudge.
I will say this, because he never swore, on the rare occasions when he would, we would tremble.
Oh,
when
yeah.
When he was upset enough to say a swear word, we would be like, oh,
the highs are high and the lows are low.
We are in trouble. Yeah,
man. What do you think about the idea that, like, some people, like, they're... whatever search, people say that, like, people who curse... are typically smarter.
Yeah, I've seen that. What do you think about that, Jesse? Yeah, you're smart.
You're smart.
Let's direct this question
to
the smartest guy in the room.
Saying fuck.
there's a lot of things that go into it. I mean, certainly the idea that people who use slang or any kind of offensive language are less smart, I mean, that's clearly ridiculous.
Not according to my 8th grade English teacher.
As far as being more smart, it's more the notion that, you know, that people who are likely to use that are going to be less bothered by, you know, just... random restrictions on speech,
right?
So that if you're comfortable saying that, you're going to be, you know, more open-minded about things in general than like, oh, I can't say this because I'll be in trouble, would suggest a closed-mindedness that would then apply to other things as well.
To lesser intelligence.
Also, I feel like the when I have been like privy to these like different articles that come up about like people who curse and like their level of intelligence, what like even just before I even read the article. Just from the headline, I'm like, yeah, I get that. Because they're working smarter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you can get your point across by throwing out a profanity rather than having to, like,
explain
hold hands
and
explain the whole fucking thing.
Right.
Well, I think you're a smarter person.
I think it also goes to what, I'm probably going to misattribute the quote, but I think Ben Franklin somewhat famously said, I'd have written a shorter letter if I had more time.
It's usually attributed to Voltaire, but I believe it's not actually... it's a misattribution, I believe.
Yeah, it's just a phrase that's out there. I'd have written a shorter letter if I had more time. Because if I had more time, I would be more concise. But because I didn't have enough time, I'm just getting it all out as fast as I can.
Yeah.
Right? I felt that. Yeah, exactly. I felt that all the time when I was writing the book.
Like vocal vomit.
Well, we're at the half, so let's take a break and hear from our sponsors and talk about you know, our summer fun drive and all that fun stuff. We'll come right back.
Let's talk about your bar.
We'll come right back and talk about the tiniest bar that I know of. There can't be a smaller bar than 2 seats, can there?
I mean, the smallest ones I know of are like 4 seats.
There could be others that are 2 seats, but I don't think there's a smaller bar.
We don't know of them. We've heard of cases where there has been a quote-unquote bar that only holds a single person, but this is not a regular thing.
It's
like
usually,
you give someone a drink and you put them into a phone booth or things like that.
Yeah. Sure.
It's usually the speakeasy on Heritage Radio where Souther and I are just talking to each other, like cracking some of these bottles that people brought us.
Yeah. might want to crack into some of that crazy Mexican rum we got last
Let's
week.
Do it.
Let's do it on the break. We'll be right back with Jesse
Scheidlauer.
Damn it. I blow it every time. Fuck. We'll be right back with Jesse Scheidlauer. Fuck.
That fuck placement was perfect.
The
following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com. The following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
We're back.
Fuck. We are back. I just want to read this real fast, get it out of the way. It's our annual summer fund drive. We need you to help Heritage Radio Network raise $25,000 before July 31st. We're on track to do it, so don't worry, but with your help, we'll get there. Inviting my listeners to come to become a monthly recurring member. You can set up a monthly recurring donation and support the radio network throughout the year for just $5 a month is the lowest increment or any increment you can afford.
$5. That's it?
A month. That's not even, you're not even buying us a drink.
Yeah, I mean, like...
Go for 15. 15's a drink. Buy me a drink every month.
20. Let's do 20.
That's with a tip. So, yeah, you can do an individual membership for as low as $5. You can choose the show you want to donate to or just the network as a whole. It's really cool. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Please support our summer fun drive. Now we're back with Jesse. And now we're finally going to talk about stuff we typically talk about, which is bar stuff. You have a bar called Threesome Toll Booth. And it's been around for how long now?
It's about a year and a half.
It's a year and a half old. And it seats two guests, and the bartender is the third in this threesome. What the fuck? what were you thinking? And why? And all that stuff. Talk to me about all of it.
Well, so
first you did a bunch of crazy off-site weird things, and that's kind of how this boiled up, right?
Yes. Yeah,
so go back to that.
Well, so there were originally two of us involved, my colleague N.D. Austin, who primarily does experience design, and... there are a number of different things he's done, and speakeasies, and by the way, we're very careful about the word speakeasy. When we use this, we really mean illegal bars. We don't use speakeasy.
Yeah,
mean
that's the only way I like it to be used.
Yeah, a bar with no signage or anything like that.
Sure.
So we've regularly had events where there are, you know, true speakeasies, and the most famous of these was the Night Heron, which was about 5 years or so ago. So this was built into a water tower in Chelsea.
Yeah.
So normally when we do things, they last for a weekend or, you know, perhaps just a day, and you don't hear about them.
We don't hear about it until it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you never hear about any of them until
your entire business model was built on FOMO.
Yeah. Totally. And by the way, it's not a business model. The speakeasies in this case, they're except for the Night Heron, they're just, we do them for fun. They're just for the community, other people doing underground things.
Crime for crime's sake.
Yeah, urbex, urbex type people.
Crime for crime's sake.
You know, the urbex crowd, like they come, you know, we supply everything. They're just there for, you know, as our guests. You know, the Night Heron got a lot of attention. It was an amazing event. So that's the first thing that I worked on him with. I had previously been to something else that he had hosted. So I bartended that. You know, he and his partner at the time were the main driving forces behind getting that built and set up.
Let's pause right there for a sec. How, all the way back to that one, did you get selected to be the bartender? Because you've told me you didn't bartend before any of this. So you were going to go into this event, which was how many people showed up?
It fit about, you know, about 20, 15 or so plus staff.
You were kind of just a home bartender at that point.
Yes.
But just at a weird location.
Yeah, but the other thing about the speakeasies is that in general, we could serve one drink.
Sure.
That's it. You know, we would bring glasses, not cups, I mean real glasses, and we would do things the best we can. But every kind of event like this you're talking about, you're carrying a 50-pound bag of ice up 15 flights of stairs in the dark, carrying a case of whiskey across a half mile of muddy train tracks, wherever we're going. So we couldn't be serving a full bar worth of stuff. We would come up
really
with,
tired all of a sudden.
No, you know, yeah. So we would come up with one cocktail we were going to serve. That would be, we have no running water. You know, we bring in just a mister to clean out glasses, clean, quote unquote.
Yeah.
It's best we can do. And it's always good, and you know, we serve interesting drinks. We would, you know, have garnishes of some sort, but just one thing at a time. And we've always wanted to do something where we really could have a real bar, you know, where we're doing the things that we want to, serving things, you know, a wide range of things, and something longer lasting where we can actually get set up and come back to it all the time instead of packing it in every single day.
Generate revenue, make a living,
and generate revenue. Sure,
this is New York, man. You have to make money on everything.
Yeah. So we had various ideas about what we could do, and of course, you know, well, we're going to open up a bar, but our drinks will be good. Like, you know, everyone who opens up a bar says this. You know, like, what are we going to do?
Is that the catch? Make good drinks?
Mm-hmm. No.
I'll start on the next.
Have you ever been to a Mori Margo?
I'll start on the next project.
I don't know how they're still around.
Oh, mind blown. Make good drinks. Okay, that's the key.
Wow, that was
put that in my notebook.
That was impressive.
Yeah, thanks, Matt.
So as part of some of the events that we had done, we had had unusual things like that. So we have a bar that fits into an attaché case, and we would, you know, we'd sit in the bottom of an actual closet, a functioning closet, just sit on the floor with a candle, make a single drink for a single person.
That's so cool.
We would do things like that. And we thought, well, this is a good thing we can do.
Confessional booth and like,
yeah, confession, you know,
Notre Dame.
Confessional booth, train, train carriage kind of thing. This can actually work. This would be, you know, this would be unusual and interesting and different. And, you know, what do we need to do to give this a shot? And my colleague also, Andy Austin, he had had an experience for a couple that had been to several of our previous events, wanted to do something special, and he set up an experience in an actual toll booth, an abandoned toll booth on a highway in the Northeast,
right,
for a single couple. And that went incredibly well. So we thought, you know, like if we can get a bar super small. Like,
and that one was sort of contracted. They said, build us an experience or something?
Yes.
Was this like a marriage proposal or something?
It was a couple of some celebrity who had been dating for a while and were going through some issues. And one of the members of the couple said, I need you to do something crazy, like, you know, set something up for us. So, you know, so it was a custom thing.
Yeah. That's great.
That's really awesome. Yeah.
I love that.
How do you get into this business of experience creation? Anyway.
I mean, we are in that business. But
right,
like,
but
you're talking about like very specific.
Very micro.
Very
there are places that do it as an actual professional thing. And there are a lot of things that go into that, including, you know, regular just, you know, running a bar, immersive theater, which,
sure,
you know, which we've learned from. We have some experience in, and that sort of influences some of the things we do.
Now, I want to make sure that the listener is clear that we're not really going to talk about what goes on at your bar. Because it's so experiential, I don't want to blow it for anybody. But I got to go, and it was great.
Well, thank you. We can talk about things generally. I mean, the things that we don't want, we don't allow any photography inside at all, because it really doesn't represent, you know, a photograph doesn't represent what it's actually like to be there.
Do you check people's phones at the door?
No, actually. In fact, phones are allowed.
I would totally do that.
Well, but people think they're not. So, like, if people have their phone and the phone goes off,
that's curiosity. It's a curiosity. You say no photos, and people suddenly think, okay, then the phone just can't even be on the table.
Yeah, but they when their phone buzzes, they apologize, they turn it off, they put it away. They think it's not. They don't want the phone there. And
I remember,
we agree that it's not the best thing to have phones. But if you want to, it's okay. But no one ever does.
And the experience, it's an hour, right?
It's a soft hour. So we have an hour and a half between seatings. So it usually runs an hour five, an hour 10, maybe a bit longer. The time in between, I have to, you know, the bartender, we have to hand wash 30 or 40 glasses and stirrers and shakers and, you know, get more ice and get anything we ran out of. And if you're lucky, go to the bathroom. You know, so, you know, an hour five,
if
an hour
lucky.
10. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm serious. An hour five, an hour 10 is fine. You know, once you get past that, it gets pretty tight to get all that done.
Right.
But it's not a set time. It's a bit over an hour.
And how does someone become a patron?
There's a reservation system. We use the TOC system. On the middle Monday of the month, at 1 p.m., tickets go on sale for the following month. And typically the entire month sells out in, you know, 15 minutes now. The period in the fall and the early
you gotta be ready.
The fall and the early winter after we had gotten some actual press. It was
you were in the Times, right?
New York Times. We were in the Times. We were in the New Yorker.
You guys are like Nine Inch Nails concert tickets.
So the entire month would sell for the first.
I mean, it's 12 guests a night. That's basically 6 reservations per night, and you're only open 4 nights a week.
Well, we're it's 5 seatings a night.
Oh, it's 5 seasons.
Yeah, so 10 people.
I thought it was 6. Okay.
So the entire month would sell out in 4 minutes.
And going back to what you said earlier about how you use the word speakeasy, you guys are not.
We're not a speakeasy. We're not a pop up. People call us both of these things. We're not. We're just an unusual bar.
Smack their wrists.
Yeah.
We just tell them. You know,
right. You're not a pop up. You're here to stay, mm-hmm. and you're not a speakeasy because you're operating a legal business.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the process, like when you were dealing with the SLA and you explained this to them? Did they think you were crazy?
Or did you?
In fact, we are operating within an existing restaurant that has a liquor license.
Oh. Okay.
There would be no practical way we could get a liquor license for 10 people a night. It's just, we couldn't do it.
Right.
So we are within a space that has its own license.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And it's pretty clandestine. Like, you go and talk, which is the reservation system where you pay in advance. Because this is like buying a ticket to a show.
Right.
So you go on talk, you get your reservation, and then you don't. You get an email back saying where it is, because you don't even really advertise where you're at, right?
Right.
And when to show up, and you know, you get further instructions come to you by email.
Yeah, we tell people that it's in East Williamsburg, and that the morning of, they will get an email describing what the process is.
So, if without giving too many details away, like I don't want this to, I don't want this episode to be too vague on the details of the Threesome Toll Booth, but like if you could give us like a slight like run of show, is that okay?
Of course, yeah, sure.
That'd be cool.
He's only going to say what he wants to say. Yeah, lay it on us.
And use fuck as many times as you want, by the way.
Yeah, let's see. Shit.
You just fucking spill your...
I know.
Damn it.
That's good booze there.
It's my stupid thumbs.
If you're going to say a swear thumb. in here, will you use the F word for
Jesus? Oh, yeah, sorry, fuck.
Yeah, cross promo, come on.
Matt, you got any napkins out there?
I spilled rum all over the technology.
I spilled, yeah, thanks.
All right, you ready? You ready to pick this back up? You're gonna...
Thanks, buddy. Sorry.
I'm having a great time today, by the way.
I mean, again, we're on vacation starting tomorrow.
Yeah, totally. We're always working, though.
That's true.
Never clock out.
Never clocked out. Same for Jesse, right?
So
what's the experience? You get the email, and then you show up.
Well, you show up at a at an outside place, and
you're blindfolded,
and you're no
and bound and you're gagged,
told to be there at an exact time, and it really does matter. You know, if people are 2 minutes late, I mean, you can't shift anything. You know, it's 2 minutes less that you have for them. They get let in. There is an entry procedure which we prefer not to talk much about, and it's meant to be a little bit disorienting.
It's very cool,
and partly even a little bit uncomfortable. Like for a while, you don't really know what's going on or where you are. When you do enter the space, people tend to, even if they know what they're going for, like people tend to laugh because it really is much, much smaller than they thought it would be, and it's very elaborate and attractive. They always giggle for a while. There are more introductory things that go on. But after a bit, 5 minutes, 10 minutes or so of this, we serve drinks. And they are typically small. It'll be a cocktail tasting. There will be, depending on how fast you drink, 5 or 6 or 7 drinks over the course of an hour. There's no menu. So we'll typically start, for a given season, we typically have one thing that we always start with. And then after that, it's entirely up to the bartender. So I will always ask, is there anything you're allergic to? Is there anything you really don't like? I will make a couple of drinks, get a sense of what they do like, and just go from there. And it depends on the season. If it's the summer, we're obviously going to be doing more things, gin, rum. If it's the winter, we're going to be doing more whiskey-based things. But, that completely depends. It depends on what people say. Like, I had this cool thing 3 weeks ago. Now I'm using it all the time. And just go from there.
It's like Sleep No More mixed with Attaboy.
I want to talk about the notion of making people uncomfortable, because I love that.
Because you're really good at making people
feel uncomfortable. I try to be. Mm-hmm. I try to do lots of little things that make people uncomfortable. Because
you do it to me all the time, and I love it.
The first thing I'm trying to do is shift them out of their comfort zone and put them off balance, so that then when I do the thing that's delightful, I really blow their doors off. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Oh, pour some more rum. Right? And I've got an example, and I'm similar to your situation. I'm sworn to somewhat secrecy on telling even where this is, but there's a place.
You haven't even told me about it.
Well, there's
this security.
Because I want you to go and be. I want you to go and enjoy. Right?
Hey, all
right,
cheers, we're gonna drink some rum. Yeah, let's drink a little bit of rum real quick.
Let's see if I can not drop it this time.
Yeah.
Chin, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Yeah, Souther finally learned how to drink without.
It's my thumbs, man. I don't have thumbprints right now, so I have no grip. It's from that.
Why don't you?
It's a long story.
Your stories?
I've had
long?
To go.
No way.
I've ended up having to go to a dermatologist. It turns out that my fingers have taken on a sensitivity to citrus oils, and that's the only garnish we use at Amore Margo. So my fingers basically have chemical burns. My fingerprints are gone.
See,
that's not that long of a story, and that's crazy.
It's called. Is it sun sensitive?
No, it's not the sun thing. There's the margarita dermatitis, right? That's what that one's called, or Lyme, LIME, Lyme disease. That's the one that the sun affects.
Yeah.
This is just the citrus oils are burning my skin. It's just these six fingers where I do twists.
You should stop. Stop doing twists.
I'm.
Stop twisting the knot away, bro.
I'm gonna just do oils in a spritzer like this one here. Anyway. There's a thing I went to similarly. You make your reservation on Tock. It's very expensive. You pay up front. It's a multi-course meal. It's a restaurant.
Okay, so the Tock?
Tock is a reservation system like Resy.
Yeah.
Or any of the other
reservations. How do you spell it?
T-O-C-K. TikTok.
Okay.
But you pay in advance like a concert ticket. And it's invented by the guys from the aviary in the office, actually, Tock, the whole reservation system. Because
because
they consider their
Micah
thing.
Micah Mountain was saying.
Exactly. They consider Micah was on. They consider their whole experience like a show. So you're paying for the show. Mm-hmm. If you don't show up for the show, then you still pay. It's not like making a dinner reservation and not showing up for dinner. And then they don't make any money. So you go to this thing, and it's really expensive, and it only seats 18 people. Mm-hmm. And you think to yourself, like, I'm going to spend $400 a head. I'm taking a date, obviously. It's $800. I'm investing in this date. Better be real romantic and nice. And you get there, and it's a big, giant, long
table.
Better
fuck.
Yeah, you better fuck. It's a big, giant, long table, so it's communal seating. So everybody's a little bit pissed and a little bit uncomfortable that now they have to sit right next to somebody else for this really expensive thing. And you get through, of course, 3, 4, 5. And then they whisk you. They come out and they say, we'd love to take you back to the kitchen, introduce you to the chef, show you all the things. And you all go out to do the thing. And when you come back, the tables have all been broken into deuces. But they told me after the fact, they said every single time, and my time included, everybody continues to talk to everybody. Where if you'd have come into the room and it was just deuces, you'd have never gotten to know those people.
That's interesting.
So I love the notion of being like, let's make them uncomfortable.
Like a social experiment.
Yeah. I think some of the things you do are a social experiment. I think even as small as like the fact that I use empty gin bottles as my water bottles at Amore Margo. Mm-hmm. When I come over and pour you a glass of water, your instinct is, that dude is just pouring me a huge glass of gin. It's uncomfortable just for a second.
Where did you start doing that from? Did you pick that up from somewhere else, or was it just like being resourceful?
I think it's just innate for me to try and, you know, again, at my bar, which is unique as well, there's already so much stuff that my guest isn't familiar with. I want to put them out of place for a second. So
it's always beef eater bottles, right?
Because they're clear and they, you know. But so if I put them out of place for a second, then I can pull them back into a place where I want them, right? So I shift them off their feet and then I put them in a balance where
just
I want them.
Just fucking with people's minds, man.
But in an effort to... So I used to give a big lecture about this, and it's manipulation, not in the bad... I don't think manipulation is always bad. No. I'm manipulating them in a way that I can then force them to have the best time possible in my space.
Love is manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know?
Anyhow. I like the notion of the pieces of your puzzle that were a little bit off-putting.
So I know you're going to get...
Not off-putting, but that made me a little uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I don't know what the fuck's happening right now.
Right.
I liked it. It's like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And then you get this delightful follow-up, and then you're immersed.
So I know you're not going to divulge too much information.
He's not telling us anything. This is the one show where we talk about nothing.
We're doing a great job at it, too. But for just... I can't wait to come and visit, obviously. But can you tell me about like the experience as far as like is the bar set up like where you've got like your two guests, one bartender, is it more of like a setup to where you're like the bartender and the guests are like interacting, or is it like more of like a, I'm presenting this grand situation to you.
No, no, it's absolutely interactive. Everyone spends the whole time talking to the bartender. And again, they don't have to. I say very often, almost every time I have to say this, you know, I'm here for you. You're not here for me. You know, people are very concerned that, like, they're saying the right things, or they're entertaining me, or they're talking to me. And, like, you don't have to. Like, if they want to, I can make them drinks, and they can talk to each other if they want. It's a bar, you know. Like that, we could do that. That's the way most bars work. But no one. I mean, I think once in the entire year and a half, you know, for each of us, you know, for any of us, we have a third bartender now, a friend of ours who we've brought in.
P.S. I've been asked to come and guest.
I was going to ask if we could go,
but you can't
do a foursome.
There's no room. I'm telling you, there's no room.
There really isn't.
It was in the lavatory of a Southwest flight to Austin or something like that. Like
that sounds luxuriously large.
Yeah. But so literally, like once it's happened that like two people have just talked to each other pretty much the whole time and hardly said anything to me. It's always interactive. They're always talking, and it's a big part of the experience.
I can't gush enough about it. I had such
Thank
a great time.
Thank you so much.
I also can't. It doesn't matter how much I gush. You're booked out every time you put up reservations, so we're not helping you. You're helping us just by being here. But I did want to circle back to that notion that we talked about, me coming and doing mm-hmm. like maybe a series of nights, or you know, be there one night a week for a month or something, and kind of present my own things. But I so yep. adore what it is that goes on there.
Well, thanks. We love that. And in particular, it is very individual. I mean. I do my own things, you know, my colleagues, they do their own things, and it really...
Well, you have to, because there's not even an opportunity to be like, okay, come on down and stage and watch how it works. No, there's no room. What do you set up an Instagram Live and have your buddy watch it from outside.
Right. But I find that kind of good and bad, to be honest. Because
right.
there are a lot of things, like, I don't really know how to make this common thing, or if someone said, I want, like, no, but on the other hand, I get to do all the things exactly what I want to do. Like, if I'm, like, I love chartreuse, I use chartreuse all the time. You know, my colleague does different things. Like, there's something that he makes very often, and, like, he got back from France last month with, you know, 29 bottles of this weird, of different kinds of this weird thing that he makes in this special drink. I mean, I make that on occasion, but he's obsessed with it.
Sure.
You know, same thing. The thing that I make, the drink that I almost always serve as my second drink is a shrub-based drink. I make the shrub myself, and he makes this occasionally. I make it pretty much every time. I like talking about it. I think it's a good drink. It's something that people react to in a particular, like, what they say about it tells me a lot about what they're going to like next. So sure. I always do that. But it's entirely up to us.
It's your litmus for the guest. You're reading them out. I think I asked you when I was there, but let's, for the listeners, how often do you have repeat guests? You got regulars?
Pretty often. I mean, not regulars like they're coming every week, but we do have a number of people who have come, let's say, more than three times, you know, three or four. I think five is the maximum. And we do try to take notes what we've made, so they'll come back, they'll get something different, uh-huh. or at least generally different.
So did you take notes when I was there?
In case I come again? I don't think I did for you, because we were, you know, you had more time, we're doing a different thing, but I usually do.
Okay.
Does the magic ever sort of go away for you as the host, because you're so close to the process?
It really doesn't. I mean, it's really, I look forward to it every week. It's the most fun thing. And if I if I miss a day or I'm traveling a bit, I come back, it's like, God, I really miss doing this.
That's great.
It's fantastic.
That's really great.
Yeah.
What else are you doing to professionally? Are you doing anything else?
You still writing
dictionaries?
I'm still I have a day job working in academic publishing.
Okay.
I teach in the Columbia University's MFA writing program. You know, I still do, you know, language consulting stuff.
So nothing. You're just hanging out.
So pretty much. Just a bunch of dumb shit.
Yeah, just playing video games and getting high.
Bunch of top 100 smart guys in New York City shit.
How do you feel about that title now that we're just beating the shit out of it?
Again,
beating
I
don't, the fuck so, out of
hey, it was on
time,
your website, like, pal. You edited it.
I just...
Have you? This is a random question that may or may not have anything to do with anything, and maybe we can connect you if it's not true. Do you know who David Wondrich is?
Of course, yeah.
You know he's working on a book right now, the Oxford Dictionary of Cocktails or whatever.
I had heard, yeah.
Maybe you should be on the team.
Well, he knows more than I do about this, but...
Well, you know how to do it, though. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's written a dictionary before. He might need some help. Right? I mean, there's a lot of formatting going on in there.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to talk to him. And, of course, one of the things
I'll
about
introduce
this,
you, because he reached out to me to write an entry.
He was on the show just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, July 4th.
No, in fact, we had a brief interaction on Twitter. The most recent release of new words from the Oxford English Dictionary, they had an entry for Amaro. So I mentioned it to him, like, hey, can you know anything more about this? And we had a little back and forth about that. But no, one of the things that is a little bit bothersome, you know, I don't have a background. I haven't worked in a regular bar or restaurant at all. And, you know, I would like to know, there's a lot more that I would like to know. I could be better. I could know more about that sort of thing. I don't really know people in the industry because we're really not connected to it in that way.
Yeah.
And that is something that I miss, in fact.
Hmm.
Well, anytime you want to come by, Grand
Army. I will introduce you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Because I think, frankly, I just think you guys would be pals.
Well, but also, he lives down the street from my bar, yeah, from Grand Army.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a great meeting place.
That's a perfect place for a meeting of minds that like to drink. Yeah. What are you going to do with your month off?
Work on some new cocktail ideas, yeah. I hope.
What does that mean? Go out to cocktail bars and glean some
ideas?
Yeah,
what's your process? Do you go to distilleries, wineries, breweries? Do you go like have food and like kind of like work on an idea based on that? Like, I mean, obviously all those are factors, but
not much food based. I mean, we just occasionally started now having just very, very light snacks, you know, just like pour into a glass kind of thing.
No, I mean, but inspiration for new cocktails.
Yeah,
not necessarily in the bar.
Not generally from food. It's more like trying interesting things and, you know, here's this weird liqueur that we've never heard of. Like, what could we do with this? And just experiment for a while with that. You know, we'll read things when we can, like, you know, and something that seems unusual, like we have to give this a try, see what it's like. We tend very much to prefer classic or classically based cocktails. We don't like things that are, you know, 12 ingredients and you haven't heard of 9 of them.
Sure.
You know, sort of
have,
like,
you don't have the room.
Well, we don't have the room. Certainly,
we don't have the room for that kind of inventory.
But even if we did, it's just less of our style. Like, you know,
yeah.
3 ingredient cocktails. This is a book. Like I mention this to people all the time. Like this is
like 12 bottle bar.
Yeah.
Robert Simonson's book, 3 Ingredient
Yeah,
Cocktails.
No, that's what I'm referring to. Yeah, so we do have room for a fair amount of stuff there, but
yeah,
of course not everything. So, you know, we get the things that we want to be making stuff with and go from there. So, you know, we don't have a single bottle of vodka in the bar at all. We probably have a dozen different kinds of gin at any given time.
Yeah. Choice. I will tell you this. I have really clear and very good memories of going. I don't really have many memories of the drinks themselves, because that's not what that bar's about. They were classic cocktails. They were delicious. I had an incredible time. That's what that bar's about.
Well, isn't that the takeaway?
Hopefully,
that
all the time.
Expect for pretty much any occasion, right?
Yeah, yeah, like, hopefully all the time. I remember who I was with. I remember the things we talked about. I remember
you definitely want to
looking
like,
around the space and taking it in.
Yeah,
and you know, it sounds like how small it is. That would take 2 seconds, but no, there's so much in there to look at and to see how the inner workings of this thing happen. You know, because it's everything. You jokingly said something about an airplane bathroom, but like everything is like has its place and its meaning and its purpose and
a
its
place for everything and everything in its place.
Man, because it has to be. You
yeah,
put
we've
one thing out of place and the place is a wreck, right? Because it's so small that any one thing out of place is making it's terrible, sloppy now.
I mean, we've had to reorganize several times just to make everything a little bit better, and still there's, you know, it gets uncomfortable by the end of the evening. I mean, you can't stretch out. There's really, you know, for the bartender, there really isn't any room to, you know, to walk around.
You gotta stand there the whole time because there's no room to even like squat down and stretch your knees.
There's no back of house you can go hide in or take a break. Or...
Nope.
It's like fucking...
I can't wait to check it out.
Oh, can't wait to have you there.
This is... you know, more than anything out of the information that we've gained from this show today, it's mostly I'm just inspired. Inspired by, like, making
something
work...
It's an inspiring place.
Making something work with such a small space and also... Just championing the word fuck, you know, like, I mean, like, this is
like a
two-parter, like, just really inspiring episode that we've had today. Jesse, thank you for being on the show today.
No, thank you so much for having
me. It's great. Souther, do you want to talk about anything that you got going on?
Always.
Also, Andrew, thank you for sitting in on the show today.
Oh,
you
I
got
just...
all those chains on, man.
Yeah, man. Well, he just has two chains. He's wearing two chains.
Two chains. And thank you for bringing us this great toolkit from Jägermeister.
Absolutely. Swag bag of Jägermeister tools. Thanks so much. It's a huge favorite brand of mine. Everybody knows that. Yes. I do have a few things to say. I wanted to answer your question from earlier, and I went to the metrics here. Your question about how many countries we're in. I scrolled down the whole thing. I stopped counting when we got to countries that had less than 35 listeners, and I was over 100 countries.
No shit.
Yeah. And it still goes on. There's probably another 100 that have less than that. But it's crazy. That's a lot.
That's got to feel so cool.
Let's go all the way to the bottom. Who's at the bottom? Who needs to listen more? The last one, I don't even know where this is. It's one past Somalia. S-E-Y-C-H-E-L-L-E-S?
The Seychelles, yeah.
The Seychelles.
Island group.
Get your shit together. Seychelles only got one listener out there. Hey, Seychelles, spread the word.
That's amazing. You know,
that is amazing.
it's really fun to look at those numbers and connections, you know, and like see who's listening out there. And you know, the most exciting part about it, and I think that Jesse would agree with this, is that it's not about they're probably not cocktail bars in
Tonga, for instance.
Like, for instance,
where we have one listener.
Yeah. But the cool thing is that there's enthusiasm behind it, you know, behind cocktails,
sure,
and history and spirits and the techniques and everything. So that's really cool to have the just the overall like joy and enthusiasm behind what it is we do and talk about. And, you know, sorry for any of those countries out there that don't really like the word fuck, but we... remember when Giuseppe Gonzalez... This is before you were on the show.
That's what I was going to say. Are we gonna,
Giuseppe Gonzalez was on the show like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And he said fuck over 300 times. And we had to put a... Well, we didn't have to, but we did. We put a one of the Tipper Gore like parental advisory explicit lyrics things on the...
And then, so beyond that, let's look at the calendar real fast. Obviously, you and I are taking off tomorrow to go down to New Orleans, my former hometown.
One of yours.
Yeah, one of my many.
You got a lot of exes.
Oh, I do. Next week's show is going to be awesome. It's Josh Polina, who's been standing outside the front door of Death & Company for the past 3 years, rain, shine, or snow. He's the doorman. Where they don't take reservations. So the door lines up right at 6 o'clock when they open, and they're automatically full, and then it's a wait list all night long.
Yeah.
And I want to talk to him about how he deals with people. At the same time, we're having Santi Daddy on. Santi has manned the phones at PDT, where they do take reservations for the past 5 years. And she talks often about how the first 45 minutes of her day, because they don't answer the phone until 3 p.m., they only take reservations for night of. She's like, the first 45 minutes of my day are amazing. I say yes to everyone. The remaining 7 hours and 15 minutes, I say no to everyone. It's horrible.
That's such a weird, stressful.
Such a weird, I'm curious to know how these two gatekeepers do their jobs. And if you're listening out there, shoot us questions via Instagram or Twitter, and we'll try and answer your questions on the air with those two. And then upcoming shows include Amy Zavato, who wrote a new book called Prosecco Made Me Do It. Rob Morton's going to be on.
Rob.
Got Ben Rojo, Charlotte Wassey, Freddie Sarkis is coming up.
Ooh, I love Freddie Sarkis.
James Toon, Massa, I don't know how to say Massa's last
Yola
name.
Yola is coming on,
and
too.
Bo and Greg Boehm are all coming on to talk about their new project, which I went to their friends and family last night at Katana Kitten, really awesome new Japanese-inspired bar from that team. A lot of great shows coming up.
Heck yeah, man.
But so, first, a vacation in New Orleans. Quote-unquote vacation.
It's not a vacation, man.
I'm giving two talks and working one bar shift.
You know what,
though?
Fuck that shit. Because the thing is...
Fuck that shit.
No, seriously. What we do for work in the industry, and I want everyone to know this.
Uh-oh.
Like, no, it's true. When we travel for work, it's like... a lot of people, when they go on vacation, like, they work normal jobs... They go on vacation, and what do you do when you go on vacation? You see sights, and you mostly eat and drink.
Yep.
In our industry, when we go on work trips, we're eating and drinking and seeing some stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of his vacation, but...
It's a little bit of both. I'm bartending Thursday night. I'm giving two different talks on Saturday, and I'm bringing a Zoom recorder and going to record people like we did last year.
We need to talk about that after the show.
Yeah, absolutely. You should maybe grab one too.
We've got to do it together.
Well, we're not always together.
We should be.
Oh, all right.
I'm gonna put a ring on it right now.
Oh, man. Is it going to be one of them big turquoise ones you wear?
I don't want you walking sideways like from wearing one of my rings. They're really heavy.
They are.
We should definitely, like, when do you leave from Tails?
Monday morning?
You want to do Pig and Punch, Bacchanal on Sunday?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
All right. So everyone hit us up if you want to do any of that stuff. We're going to be at the Spirited Awards on Saturday night.
Hopefully taking home a prize, a plate.
You know who's going to win?
Us.
Well, I'm not competitive.
If Wondrich wins, I will be so mad. He has a set of plates already.
He already said that he's not allowed to win any more awards. He's got enough plates he said to have a dinner party. That's a real thing.
He's got enough. The award is a plate, you know. Mm-hmm. He's got enough of those to do a dinner party, he said.
Yeah, exactly. He said he and Julie Reiner were just going to have a dinner party with all their crystal plates, and I want to be part of that. but we're in good company. We've got Bar None. We've got Life.
Love, Bars. Love Eric Castro, one of my greatest pals from across the country.
Yeah, we've got Bartender at Large. Yeah.
Uh-huh. We got, we're up against, the only one I don't know is the guy from Whiskey Cast.
Yeah, man. We've got a lot of good people. Good company.
Strong competition. And we'll be at the awards ceremony. I'm going to wear my kilt.
Yeah?
It says formal attire. That's what I wear when I go formal.
I'll wear
a Stetson?
White hat instead of a black hat? I don't know.
Is white considered more formal in the cowboy hat world?
I'll wear a freshly pressed tank top.
Nice.
Anyway, that's it for the show. We got to get off air here, and I want to thank everyone for being on the show today. It's been a lot of fun.
Real quick, how can people find you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
ThreesomeTollbooth.com.
That's where it's at.
Perfect.
With T-H-R-E-E or three?
T-H-R-E-E. Yeah,
that's important.
That is important.
ThreesomeTollbooth.com. And then you can make your reservations once a month. So get on there as quick as you can. They burn up quick.
Yeah, man. All right. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Thank you so much for you beautiful people being on the show. Yeah, beautiful fucking people being on the show.
Here's
our fucking listeners.
Cheers, guys. Thanks so much. Cheers.
And we'll see you down at Tills, and then we'll see you next week. All right. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord knows that country music's gonna save.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.